The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
It is, and it's a Wednesday. Welcome to it. I am Nicole Sandler, coming to you live from sunny South Florida. Hi. At NicoleSandler.com, on the Progressive Voices channel, on a bunch of other online stations, as well as streaming video to YouTube and Twitter and Twitch and Facebook, if all is working properly, which is never a guarantee on any given day. Anyway, I guess there's some good news today. They caught the guy in New York, who shot up the subway yesterday. And, you know, he's got mental health problems. And we have a mental health crisis in this country. Not enough people who need help can get it. Apparently, the guy had no felony record. So there's nothing that would have stopped him from being able to purchase a gun, even though he's off. They showed some YouTube videos. I did not go searching for them, and I didn't watch any of them. But the guy's a nut. The guy's got problems. He even admits he has problems. And yet, there's no safety net for people like that. And, you know, he's not the one who needed protection. In this case, it was all those people on the subway. Luckily, he was a bad shot, or maybe his smoke bombs made it difficult to see. So nobody who was hit was there. No lives were threatened. There were a few people, you know, injured, taken to hospital. But thankfully, knocking on wood laminate here, nobody died. Can't say the same thing for Ukraine and the news we're getting out of there is the latest satellite imagery shows that Russia, you know, they pulled their troops from the west, and they're now amassing again on the east to really go all in on the Donbas region, which is frightening. And for instance, Mariupol, we're hearing more and more, and the news is just bad. And the thing is, nobody is able to get in there to report on what's actually happening. And the fear is that when, you know, when the Russians are kicked out, because I'm remaining optimistic, that and the Ukrainian authorities can get back in, that what they're going to see is really horrific. And it's going to make Bucha look like not as horrific as it is. So, you know, if you've been listening to this program for any amount of time, for the last 6 weeks, I've been communicating with a woman named Tanya. So we met when I, you know, just, I guess it was days after the bombing began. So the Putin's assault on Ukraine started on February 24th. I had called because I tend to do that. I like to call places around the world where there's stuff happening. And so a few days before the invasion, I called a hotel in Ukraine. And the woman I spoke to, I swear I have nightmares about this, because she was like, oh, we're fine here. Yeah, in the east, maybe there's problems, but we're okay here. Nothing's happening here. And all I could think is, after the bomb started falling, oh my God, that woman probably says that somebody called me from the United States, and, you know, what she must think about that weird phone call she got out of the blue. Anyway, after the bombing began, I realized there are still lots of people in Kyiv. And that's when I looked up to, you know, to find another place to call. And I thought, rather than call a big hotel chain, there are a lot of hostels in Kyiv. Hostels are, you know, I know them as youth hostels, because it's usually young people who travel like that. And they have a lot of dorm-like rooms, and it's very inexpensive, and it's a safe way for people without a lot of money to travel And in Ukraine, it looks like they've got a number of them. But one of them stood out to me on the listings because it was called Friends Forever. And when I clicked through and looked at the pictures and stuff, Friends Forever was written in English. And I thought, okay, this one is speaking to me. So I called and I had a nice, brief, but very nice conversation with a woman who told me her name was Tatiana. I've since learned that she, you know, friends call her Tanya. So we call her Tanya now. And she was in the stairway having just like peeked out, but they were back down in the basement, which is where they were trying to stay safe from any incoming bombs. And so we decided then that we would communicate via the Telegraph app. And we have been for the last 6 weeks or so. And all the while, I told her I wanted to, you know, that I was keeping you guys abreast of our conversations and how she was doing. And she fled. They left Kyiv and they went to a small village. And then her husband talked her into going with her friend and her friend's little boy, who happens to be Tanya's godson, to Poland. The men couldn't leave, but they wanted the women and Mark, the little boy, to get out. So they went to Poland. They were there for about a week. And, you know, she was having, you know, I guess I'd call it survivor's guilt. Anyway, her sister lives in Dubai. And her sister sent 3 plane tickets for Tanya, her friend, and the little boy to come be with them in Dubai. And all the while, I've told Tanya, whenever you're ready, I would love to talk to you. And I know that my listeners want to hear from you too. So finally, I mean, she's been having a rough time of it, as is understandable. So we made a plan yesterday to talk this morning. Dubai is 8 hours ahead of us. So 9 o'clock a.m. here was 5 p.m. there. And so we set up for her to join me on Zoom so I could run, you know, so I could play it back for you all. And well, go figure. At the appointed time, there she was. We could see each other, but she couldn't get the audio working on her end. So for like 20 minutes, we went back and forth trying to figure this out. And finally, we realized, okay, I could call her. So I called her. Actually, I couldn't call her phone because her number is a Ukrainian number and it wouldn't go through. So I called her on her sister's phone, Dubai number, and Tanya was talking on the phone but still on the video through Zoom. Now, here's the other rub. She's got a thick accent. I mean, her English is really good, but at times it's difficult to understand. Now, I think YouTube has a closed captioning option. And at the bottom of the video, if you're watching on YouTube, I think you can click on the CC and maybe they'll put up a captions. I don't know. But YouTube chat, I'm going to watch you. And you tell me if you really can't understand her, then I'll cut the interview short. But I want try to listen. I mean, I missed every probably third or fourth word, but I was able to get the gist of the conversation. So I'm going to use you guys in the chat. You will see her. I'm going to use you guys as a barometer, though, as to whether or not you can understand and if I should keep the interview going. Either way, if I wind up having to cut it off here, I will post it along with the show at the website where I post every day show. It's NicoleSandler.com/thedate. And today is 4-13-22. All right. So let's just go to it. So what you're going to see here is when we finally decided to connect using with her on the phone and, you know, with the video. Okay. So if you hear a disembodied voice explaining something, that's just me in the background. All right. So here's how it happened. Okay, and there she is on the phone.
Hello.
Hello. Oh, my goodness, it's finally working. It's so nice to see you. Hi.
It's not easy work, yes. It's not easy work. I'm so sorry.
Oh, don't apologize. I'm glad we're able to connect and finally speak. You know, the only time we've talked is when I first called your hostel.
Yeah.
It seems like forever ago.
Yes, my darling. Actually, I want to start to speak with the words, hello, my big mom bear, but, you know, Zoom doesn't want to listen to me. So yes, the first our talk, it was be where I stay underground, yes?
Yes.
And mobile doesn't work well, so I ask you to text me a message and wait a few days. And after we speak, start to talk, I think, every day, yeah?
Yeah, pretty much.
Very much. Sometimes I cannot remember what happened this time because my brain sometimes blocks it, I think. Really, sometimes I understand what is it today? Oh, what happened yesterday? I sometimes cannot remember, but it's normal. It's life. It's my life. My past life, it was be so wonderful. Yes, of course, I want to return and I want to everything stay like before.
Yeah. It's like... But, before the bombs started and after. So your husband is still obviously in Ukraine, and you were at a village. He went back to Kyiv. He went back to the hostel, to your home?
Yes, he will go. Just a few minutes before, he sent me a message what he could come back, what he come to hostel and check everything, because we have just one man, who big man, he lives maybe 1.5 years in hostel. He know everything. And the first day of the war, I just call him and say, Yura, please take care about hostel because I don't know where we're staying. Stay there, please. You can open door for every people who have trouble, for everybody. If people can something pay, it will be great. We have money for pay, like about power, about water. If people doesn't have it, you cannot take it. But you can imagine a lot of people who come and sometimes ask, how much is it? And he say, if you can leave something, welcome. And people pay. People
Aww.
Won't pay.
Oh,
I cry
wonderful.
All the time. I'm all the time cry because sometimes people come from different country and want to help. Sometimes it's volunteers who have money for each day for living. Sometimes people who just moving. Oh, it's terrible situation. I say, please come back with money for people. People live forgot city. Oh, Chernihiv.
Uh-huh.
It's after a terrible time about Chernihiv. People coming, family. I ask where you go, and people say, we don't know, we must check because in Lviv it's really high price about rent. And I say, please, you stop here and doesn't imagine how many days, how many weeks, how many months you can stay. People cry and say, I'm so sorry, we stay just 2 weeks, it's possible. I say, yes, yes, please. And people after leave and go to Poland.
Yes.
Yes, because our hostel in center, you know, and sometimes it's scary because a different place in Kyiv, a different situation. Yes, of course. But center, you know, because close, a few kilometers from there, safe resident, and it's double scary.
Right.
So.
And do you know, did your husband tell you how things are there now? Has it quieted down in Kyiv?
Yes, in Kyiv it's quiet right now. But, you know, about racket?
About?
Nobody cannot say what time.
Yeah.
And sometimes, every day. Every morning I wake up, I take my phone, I have maybe 12, maybe 15 different messenger with news. And I check everything what I have. And I find about, what is air raid? Yes, air raid. And I just check it, Kyiv. Oh, I must quickly call to my husband and I must check what he okay because you understand what it's so dangerous. You don't know nothing. Actually, 1 week before. I think it is Friday. Yes, it's Friday. My husband called me and say what he just come back in Kiev, and after one evening he go to France, and they're coming in big house, like 7 men. Every man leave family or in near Lviv, or family go to Poland or Germany, and men come back to Kiev. Different day, different situations of about family, but everybody come back to mm-hmm. Kiev. And every man want to meet and have a dinner and talk about what happened with somebody. And there coming one man. Oh, he said, I don't want to talk too much, but he explained terrible situation. He have really terrible situation, and he have gun on the head and a lot. Yes, yes.
Oh my!
And this man explained about Bucha. He was saying Bucha, and he say about 250 die person in one place. I check for me what his name. It's like Fratherhal cult? No?
I don't.
Fratherhal cult? No. So, it's the one big place where all the people die. And Russian military put everybody in one place.
Uh-huh. Oh.
So, he explained the situation, and it's terrible. But it's just news about my husband. And you can imagine after 4 days, I see this message in news. So people know a lot, and in newspaper, it's coming after few days.
Right,
so
right.
It's all the time like that.
Yeah, I don't know how. I mean, I know how we're reacting to the news, and it's horrible. You mentioned Bucha, and we're hearing what's going on in Mariupol as well, and it's just. It's
yes,
just awful.
But you know, about Mariupol, nobody don't know what happened.
No, because you can't get in there.
Few information. And we know about what Russian military take a lot of Russian people and to make, how to say, when take people, put in the bus, and you must go to the Russian. You have just one way. So it's thousands people. Thousands
yes.
people. So we cannot imagine what happened there, because my friend has few military, Ukrainian military, who stay there. It's a nice guy, young guy, who doesn't afraid nothing, because Ukraine must be. And this man say terrible situation, really. So I don't want to read all newspaper, because
right.
I have a lot news about our friends. And Ukraine not too big. Yes, it's a big country, but it's not too big. I have 1,000 friends from different cities, you know. I have my family who live in 4 different cities,
wow.
4 different situations. Yes, all my family, my cousin, my brother. And brother, it's why? Because he a chef cook in the boat. I don't know how to say, but he just come back he want to come back to Ukraine, but in March, yes. But her family was stay in Poland this time.
Uh-huh.
So he go to Poland, yes. So half of my family stay right now in Poland. My uncle stay in Kherson. Their occupation territory.
Okay.
There she just doesn't. She cannot use money. Electronic money.
Oh,
I cannot
okay.
sell to her money. She can take 1 kilo of salt and go to people who live there near, and change to fish.
Oh, wow. So
potato.
You're trading, they're bartering, but
yeah.
not using cash, not using money.
Yeah, nothing, never. Anywhere cannot use. So just after a few days, Russian military cut TV, Ukraine,
yeah.
just Russian TV. about mobile the same, because people want to wake up and make something, and it doesn't have news everywhere the same. So situation like that, it's my family.
Yes.
Oh, it's my history.
It's heartbreaking. Now, you're in Dubai with your sister. How long has your sister lived in Dubai?
3 years.
3 years. So it's got to be tough for you because you're leaving your home. You had to leave your husband behind because men aren't allowed to leave right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's you and your friend and your godson, Mark. How's he holding up? How's the little boy holding up?
He's very nice. He's very nice. But sometimes he wake up in the morning early and, Mama, why it's walk city? And that.
Uh-huh.
And all the time voice different, like beep, 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 something like that. And he afraid Syrian. He afraid Syrian. And he all the time, Mama, I won't come back to Kyiv where it doesn't have sea.
It doesn't have what?
You know, where cry. Sea. Sea, beach. Sea,
oh, a beach, sea. The sea. Dubai is not sea, on the, I thought Dubai is right on the ocean.
Yeah. No. He asked Mama, when we come back to Kyiv, where it doesn't have sea.
Oh, it doesn't have
there. He doesn't have sea.
I see.
He doesn't want sea, he wants Kyiv. Because and we look at about this and we start to cry because a child, he wants normal life, and for him, you can imagine, we...
Hold on. I lost you. And that's where the phone line went dead. So we tried reconnecting a number of times. I tried calling her back, and it went to some kind of voicemail. I don't think it was the voicemail for the phone, but we couldn't reconnect. And she's like, let's give it like a 20 minutes and try again. And so in 20 minutes, we were able to pick it back up. So hold on, let me bring you the second part, which is shorter than the first part. And we do have a guest coming up. So anyway, back to my conversation with Tanya, who we met from Kyiv, who is now in Dubai. And we're talking for the first time. Well, since the first time.
I have a few minutes more with you, and I want to say thank you, everybody, all the world. Never, I didn't forget it.
Well, you have a lot of people out here who really care, who care about what's happening to your country and care about you personally.
Yes, I cannot believe what I see it every day. People. Every country, it's like a big, big family. It's my dream, you know. I all the time feel what I'm child of the world, and I hug and I love every people in the world. But I cannot, never, I cannot imagine what it's possible. So many people, the thousand people help right now. My country, wake up. Thank you, everybody.
Well, and you know, we wish we could do more. There's a lot of argument over here about what we should be doing, and of course, the fear of poking the monster and him letting loose with nukes, which is inconceivable. But we just want the killing to stop, and we're our hearts go out to you. So we're here. And anything we can do to help, we want to help.
My darling, thank you very much. But right now, about me and about my friend, Carrie, my sister. So she like big papa and we two mama who wait at home and to cook and try to do better, something think better at home. I'm safe. My friend's safe. My family who stay in Ukraine and my husband too. I hope safe, but thousand people in Ukraine need help. And I every morning wake up and I say, God, please tell me what I can do, something good for people, for help. If I can do something. If somebody wants to propose me some help, because I know a lot of volunteers in Kiev, my friend, who work in hospital also, you know, one girl, she, I asked, maybe you want to leave for Ukraine? She said, no, I have three cats. I must stay because with three cats, it's not possible to travel. So she at Kiev, maybe she can help a lot of people there. Maybe some people who listen to me have some idea, maybe want to do something, but don't know who can help. I have a person, really my friend. So
okay. Well, we'll maybe, stay in touch. Maybe. It's I'm, you know, I hate that this is what brought us together, but I'm so glad to have met you and to have you as a friend. Yeah. And one of these days, as we say, one of these days we will meet in person. I don't know when, and hopefully we can all go back to Ukraine and help rebuild, because it's going to need a lot of help.
Because it's the best country in the world. I so love Kiev. I'm not from Kiev. I'm from a small city, but more than 18 years before, I just come in Kiev, and I love, I'm full in love. I say, oh my God, I want to stay here. I want to live here. Dubai, it's very nice, but it's not my home.
Right.
So,
can I ask you just?
I just want to ask,
what made you decide to buy this hostel, to run a hostel in the middle of Kiev? Is that the business you were in, or what prompted that?
You know, at first, it's Asia make with me one love about person, about personality, about all the world people. And when we, it's another one time we are calling and I explain, really, we have big, big travel when me and my husband lose everything and we want to just buy a ticket one way to Asia. And there we are meet a wonderful place with name Friends Forever. It would be a small restaurant on the beach. And there we understand what we want to open something like that, because man, he was the owner. And he worked in this restaurant like cooker, like cleaner, like everything together. And he make love and be all the time open heart for people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He all the time say, how are you doing? What I can help? Maybe you need something. Not about restaurant, not about cafe. I look at him and understand what it's something crazy. I won't be like him. And when I come back to Kiev after 1 year, we decide to open hostel and to be in love with all people who come in. And it's true. Everybody, you can call to any person who stay in hostel. I have thousand number of phone people, because 1,000 people text message me the first day of the war.
Oh, wow.
Say, Tanya, please say what you want to say. So we decide open the place where people feel love in 100%.
That's wonderful. I want to come visit. When all
yes,
this is over,
please,
I want to come stay there. Yes.
I meet you in airport. I hope airport open. I meet you in airport, traditional with bread and with some Ukrainian bread. I will buy it, you know, in one time. So I will hope I see you and I hug you. My darling, thank
yes.
you. Thank you a lot for everything what you do, for every call. I'm so sorry about I doesn't answer sometimes, because my psychology situation is sometimes different, every day different.
And as I told you, the last thing I want to do is put any pressure on you, or I just want to make sure you know that there are people out here who really care. And we've become friends over the last 6 weeks. I mean, I really care.
Doesn't think something, please, doesn't think something. Sometimes just say, I drink a lot of pills, you know, for my heart doesn't cry like that.
Right.
So sometimes I'm... But I hope everything be soon very, very nice.
I hope so, too.
And I kiss everybody And I want to give all my love to every people to stay right now here and interesting what happened in my country. I hope it's the first time we're calling, but not live.
Most definitely. Most definitely. Tanya, please send my love to your sister and to Mark. And what is Mark's mother's name?
Actually, one second. Maybe I can, because he just wake up.
Oh, okay.
Mark. Хочу сказать привет в Америку. Иди сюда, загляни. Загляни. Mark. So, look at like that. I'm so sorry.
Hi.
Помаши, там тетя машет тебе.
Hello. Hello.
So, Mark just wake up. So,
He puts everything in perspective, right? Just having a child there to love that helps get through this, I would think.
He for me, it's something magic because he all the time positive and he all the time say something funny. So we all the time like to mom, you know, like, oh, it's so good. It's so cute. So child in this time, very big help.
Yes.
Really.
Okay. Well, I'm glad he's with you and I'm glad you guys are safe. And I know you're worried. We are too. And let's just, you know, collective thought and prayer and whatever we can send out to the universe to bring peace and make them stop. So we're here with you. Tanya, it's so great to finally talk to you, and we will talk again. And I'll be messaging you, sending lots of love.
Okay. With big love.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And that is our friend Tanya, who I met 6 weeks ago. I think 2 days after the bombing started in Ukraine, when I called the hostel, because I do that from time to time. I call around the world when there are things going on, and we stayed in touch, communicating over Telegram, and or Telegraph, whatever the app is called. And you've been through it with me. You know she's having a really rough time of it. I was so heartened to hear her sounding so much better and smiling. She obviously misses home. She misses her husband. Her country is being destroyed, but she's doing very well. I hope you enjoy. I hope you're able to understand her. I know it was hard at times, but I think her emotion and her feelings were coming through. So thank you for bearing with me on that. We actually recorded that this morning because it's 8 hours ahead in Dubai. So it was 9 a.m. here, 5 p.m. there. It's now 1:32 in the morning in Dubai. So hopefully they're all asleep, including little Mark. All right. Now we segue because we do have a guest coming up. And I told you we were going to talk to a guest. And, well, let me welcome her because Amy Gadja, I spelled your name wrong on the Chiron. I'm going to have to fix that.
That's absolutely fine. This is very common for me.
Mama, how do I pronounce your name? Is it Gadja?
It's pronounced Gaida, but Gaida. You can call me Amy.
Amy, and I will fix the spelling on the Chiron in a moment. So Amy Gaida is a law professor at Tulane.
That's right.
And you're the author of a new book called Seek and Hide. It's about privacy and our right to privacy. Sorry, this has been such a weird segue. I know you were in Zoom, so you got to hear the end of that. It's very emotional for me, watching what's going on in Ukraine. Sorry, it's just it's an abrupt segue because now we're live. Tanya's an amazing woman. She owns this hostel in the middle of Kyiv that's called Friends Forever. And, you know, I just called out of the blue, and she was on the stairway just coming up from the basement to get some air and check her messages before she went back down because of the air raids going on. And so we've been communicating for these 6 weeks when she went to Poland, and then her sister flew her and her friend and the little boy to Dubai, where they are now. And she's missing her husband, and she's been horribly depressed, and it's all understandable. But it's been like a roller coaster, and just seeing her doing well makes me feel good. So
That's wonderful.
Yeah. So you wrote this book, Seek and Hide, The Tangled History of the Right to Privacy. And, you know, this is a very sticky area. I guess we do have a right to privacy. The Fourth Amendment in the Constitution basically says that without so much saying it, right?
Yeah. The book is really about the right to privacy in the situation where someone reveals another's secrets. So, for example, if your previous guest had not agreed to be on, and you had revealed certain things about her, whether or not the law could come in effect, punish you for revealing truth. And so there are parallels within all these other constitutional ideas, certainly within within liberty, the right to be let alone in different areas, including searches and seizures by police. My area of interest is very much in the times that law can punish the truthful revelation of information.
Okay. And you come at this before you became a law professor. You were a journalist. So you come from that world. Was it from practicing journalism that you said, wait a minute, I want to explore the law behind all of this? Or how did that segue happen?
Well, what really happened is back when I worked in journalism, I knew an awful lot about defamation. So we learned an awful lot about defamation. Then when I became a lawyer, I practiced law, and then I became a law professor and started reading up more on media law issues, having been a former journalist, and recognized that there is this area of law called privacy, specifically something called the publication of private facts. And it's something I had never heard about working as a journalist. I always thought if I reported truth that I would be protected. And as it turns out, that is not correct. And it's not been correct from the very beginning of the United States. So I guess in that way, just sort of looking back on the sorts of things that that I struggled with as a journalist reporting, I found it very interesting that the law actually has that same sort of struggle between the right to privacy, the right to be let alone, and freedom of the press, you know,
right,
the ability to publish truth.
Right. Well, and then there are some things that it's just nobody else's business. If it's your private life, it's nobody's business. And I can actually talk about one instance. And look, politically, I'm about as far removed from Lindsey Graham as one can be. And it's a well-known secret around not only Washington, D.C., but everywhere. You know, Lindsey Graham He's never been married. There's been questions about his personal life. It's well known among certain circles that he's a gay man. And people have tried to out him, and yet there's this, like, wall. And I guess it's because, one, it's nobody's business. I think it's our business when, if you are a public figure, like a politician, and you're a closeted homosexual, but you actively work against gay rights, Then there's some wiggle room there, but this is that part of the law that you can't. Am I onto something here, or you can?
Well, so I can't speak directly to that because I don't know.
Right.
But I can tell you that that you're exactly right. That's precisely where the tension is. And very often journalism ethics are far more protective of individuals than the law would be. And so there, for example, at least the way the law stands now, if someone wanted to report that a politician was gay and had voted against gay rights, mm-hmm, that would absolutely be protected in law, because that's information that is considered newsworthy. One of the interesting things now is that because courts have been so They've really moved forward and found journalists liable for reporting truthful things. And they've also decided that journalists can more responsible for defamatory speech. I think that those sorts of cases may cause some journalists to decide not to report things.
Right.
You know, why face a lawsuit? Why face a lawsuit for defamation? Why face a lawsuit for invasion of privacy if courts are, in fact, punishing people who report that sort of truthful information?
Right. But here's, you know, the question, and this is always the question, especially when it comes to the law, you're dealing with the different judges and the different, areas in the country where attitudes may be different. And so what may apply to one person, a defamation lawsuit, may not to another in another part of the country with a different judge. So there's no standard there.
That's right. I mean, there is, you know, there's a basis for making decisions, but you're correct that very often these sorts of decisions are very subjective. So, for example, something that I consider newsworthy, you might not, and vice versa. If we were judges, we could decide those cases differently. And certainly juries could decide them differently, too. And so that's why I think this is such, at least for me, such an interesting area of law, because it is so very subjective. And that subjectivity has the real ability then to harm journalism by making journalists more timid in these areas, worried about invasion of privacy, worried about defamation, and that sort of thing.
Right. Now, when you were doing, you obviously did a lot of research for this book, and you look back, again, the Fourth Amendment does allude to privacy. In fact, that's what Roe v. Wade, the decision was based on, even though all that is probably, who knows where that is now. But in your research, you found out some interesting things about some people who came before us, like Louis Brandeis, who was a Supreme Court justice. What did you find out about him?
So interestingly, he wrote, he's very famous in legal circles for being one of the co-authors of a very famous law review article called The Right to Privacy. And in this article, he argued that media was out of control and that technology was potentially very harmful to our privacy interests. So technology out of control, media out of control. Therefore, we need to take hold and find that there's this thing called the right to privacy that will protect all of us. And that's well known. But what isn't so well known is that a few years before that, he acted on behalf of the publisher of a book called Cape Cod Folks that revealed an awful lot of personal information about individuals. Now, what's interesting there is that back in the early 1800s, he'd argued that there was no such thing as privacy, so that the law didn't recognize privacy. Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, that could very well be one of the reasons he agreed to co-write with his co-author, Sam Warren, the right to privacy. There's also my research has shown that Grover Cleveland had an awful lot to do with that article. Grover Cleveland as president and otherwise had some smarmy sort of background and very much wanted privacy in his life. And so the law review article, The Right to Privacy, helped protect him as president as well. And I think that, again, shows that clash between the information we think that we are due, the information uh-huh. that we might have the right to know versus this right to privacy.
You know, it's funny because you talk about Grover Cleveland having a sort of smarmy side. And the same thing with Warren Harding. I guess we've had a few presidents who fit that description. And those are the ones who are fighting hardest to retain their privacy, to keep snoopy reporters out of their private business.
That's right. Who would have thought it?
Right.
Warren Harding, interestingly, had a real influence on journalism ethics. So when we think about journalism ethics and the sorts of decisions journalists make every day, deciding whether something is newsworthy or not, Warren Harding had pushed back in the 1920s for this collective journalism code of ethics that would apply to journalists across the United States. He'd run a newspaper himself. He believed that ethics was important. He grabbed his fellow reporters and told them, you need to pass this, in effect, national ethics code. And journalists agreed and passed the same sort of code that he had in his newsroom. And at the very same time, he was having an affair with an extramarital affair and also had just had a baby.
Wow.
With this woman, a baby who then would remain secret because in effect, arguably, because of journalism's ethics codes and this notion of privacy, not legally necessarily, but certainly ethically.
It is a fascinating topic. And another part of it that I found really interesting deals with our right to privacy in public. And you talk about Jackie Kennedy being photographed with her family. And, I guess there's a tightrope there that we have to walk. I thought if you're out and about, you're fair game. People can take your picture. But yes or no?
So. Intriguingly, again, when we think about the origins of the right to privacy and the connection to technology, if we'd been talking 10 years ago, I would have said you're absolutely correct that there is no privacy in public. Well, what's happened in the past 10 years is that we all suddenly have phones, mm-hmm. And those phones can record surreptitiously and otherwise people out in public. And courts are increasingly concerned about this. And so therefore, they found, for example, that even in a crowded restaurant, when you can hear other people talking, when wait staff comes around the table, that if someone records someone else in that scenario, that the person who is recorded has a right to privacy, even in public in that sense. And there have been a number of other cases, too, involving children who've been photographed in public, women who've been photographed in public, all because of this increasing technology that allows us to record things that we never were able to before. Sort of like in 1890, when they wrote the right to privacy, we have today courts deciding that, in fact, there is privacy in public.
Wow. And maybe this is related to, I come from radio. I've been in radio my whole life. And I know from doing a big, morning show in Los Angeles, when we'd call people, we had to get their permission before we put them on the air. But there are some states that only have one party permission necessary. So I guess in those states where just one, as long as one side of the conversation, and if you're part of it and you're recording it, then you're giving your permission. That doesn't work in this situation.
Right, exactly. I mean, many of these cases are so brand new. We're not 100% sure where courts are going to go with this. Mm-hmm. But just within the past year, I read a court decision that said that law makes no difference.
Wow.
With regard to the sort of privacy that we're talking about. So in other words, that's very relevant for police. That's very relevant in government investigations. But if one person records another and then uploads that information to the internet, courts have suggested that that even in those states that have that so-called one-party consent,
right,
there still can be an invasion of privacy.
Wow.
That it doesn't really affect. No, that's our new media world.
How interesting that is. Then you think on the flip side, the Googles of the world and the Facebooks and how much information they take from us on a moment by moment basis. Not only those two, but any website you go to that puts cookies on your computer so they could see where you go. That's okay.
So again, we're sort of in this new era of courts really coming to understand what's happening with technology. And so again, if we had had this conversation 5-10 years ago, I would have said, of course, it's okay. Mm-hmm. Now, more recently, courts and legislatures have suggested that we need some reining in of that sort of information that's collected about us. And what I think is super interesting, and I would urge everyone listening to this to try to do this. California has a law that makes it possible for residents to request data from different websites. Uh-huh. And some websites allow even non-resident, non-California residents to request data. And so you can make a request of companies like Amazon, and they will, in fact, they've done this with me, so hopefully they will continue. They will, in fact, reveal that the data they'll reveal the data they have on you. What I found out from my research in collecting this data on me is that Amazon knows that I own a bulldog.
Uh-huh.
And so I never told Amazon I own a bulldog, and yet there it is in a folder marked pets. Amy Guida, pet. Active bulldog.
Huh.
So who knows how they got it? I tried to figure out how they found out, but they wouldn't respond to my emails. So I may never know how they found.
That's wild. But more and more information is coming out about the cookies that they put on you and how they track every click, and they know. And that's why sometimes you could tell your spouse, I think we need a new dishwasher. And then all of a sudden, you start seeing ads all over the internet for dishwashers. You didn't write it anywhere, but they know. That's creepy. And this seems to happen more and more frequently.
I feel bad for our law students who sit in a lecture hall and who I'm sure are surfing the internet at times when I'm speaking. And those ads will then pop up, and who knows what sorts of things they've been searching for. And then, of course, everyone behind them can see that sort of information.
Right. Right. That's wild. You write about Section 230, which is it's a 1996 federal law that became privacy's downfall and then the catalyst for its rebirth. Was that part of the Telecommunications Act of 1996 that is the bane of my existence? Or was so that
it's the Communications Decency Act. So it's okay. The Communications Decency Act, Section 230. And what it does is it protects websites from liability for information posted by others. And that's great. When people want to comment on a New York Times story, when the New York Times is not liable.
Right.
When they want to post something on Reddit, Reddit is not liable, even if it's privacy invading, even if it's defamatory. But the problem is that some websites, of course, go far beyond that and have developed websites that exist solely to invade privacy in some way. So the so-called revenge porn websites, for example, those exist because of Section 230, because back in 1996, Congress decided that websites should be protected in order to grow the internet. And so some nefarious people out there found that loophole, if you will, and ran with it. And so that's why I suggest that it was privacy's downfall, because it allowed such websites to come about, and also the catalyst for privacy's rebirth, because Section 230 is why these websites exist, and what motivates people then to suggest that we need greater privacy, seeing the sorts of things that that happen on those sorts of websites and otherwise.
Right. But then you also have Again, the internet is in many ways still the Wild West. It's still in its infancy when you look at the big picture. Gawker, with what happened with Gawker, where they published intimate details and video, I believe, of a sexual encounter. And I know. Can you explain what happened there? Because they were taken down by a private person, not the law, right?
Sure. Well, what happened was the private person then used the law to argue that the sex tape should be taken down. So what happened was the Gawker website published a sex tape featuring Hulk Hogan, professional wrestler Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan asked Gawker to take it down. Gawker refused. Gawker believed that it had the ability to publish anything truthful, and it made that argument. And ultimately, Gawker was proved wrong for the reasons that we talked about earlier, because everyone does have a right to privacy, and particularly privacy in sexual information, in nudity, in medical information, in some financial information. That's always been the way it's been in the United States. And so therefore, a jury decided that Gawker could be liable for publishing that truthful information. And I think that opened a lot of eyes to privacy, and people were so shocked that, we knew about defamatory information. We knew we could be liable for publishing defamatory information.
Right.
What I think a lot of people didn't realize is that, no, you can also be liable for publishing
the truth.
Private information. Wow. Exactly.
Well, it's like doxing, which has become a new phenomenon, something, that only the internet made possible. But, when the trolls jump on, they will dox you. They'll release all your personal information online. That's a crime, isn't it?
Well, tell you the way the Supreme Court has decided related cases very recently.
Okay.
Because of doxing, the Supreme Court has suggested that we have privacy even in our home addresses. And that's information that's been public for a very long time. It's something that a lot of people, including journalists, rely on. And yet within the past year, there's a Supreme Court case that suggests that there's privacy in home addresses. And it's literally because of doxing. So the Supreme Court suggested that we needed to protect certain people who donated to certain charities. The charities themselves, on all sides of the aisle, if that's a phrase, wanted privacy for their donors. And the Supreme Court then responded in a way that protects then even home addresses because of concerns about doxing.
But does this also then allow the dark money to flood into politics? It's the same premise?
That's exactly that clash that we're dealing with right now in law, that, the importance of truth, how key truthful information is to understanding democracy, to understanding our politicians, and yet at the same time, recognizing that, maybe even these politicians have some right to privacy. And where do we draw it? Do we draw it at nudity? Do we draw it at sexual information? Do we draw it at medical information? If we do draw it at medical information, does the president have less privacy in his medical information? Right. And I would agree.
Yeah.
As a former journalist, I would absolutely agree. But that is precisely then the sorts of things that judges are grappling with right now.
Wow. This is all fascinating. Amy Gaija, the book just released yesterday is called Seek and Hide, The Tangled History of the Right to Privacy. These are things that there is no, it's not black or white. There's a lot, and I guess in the law, there's a lot of that, but this is coming to the front now because of everything that's going on. Great topic. Great book. Amy Gaija, thank you so much. This has been fascinating.
Thank you, Nicole. I appreciate it.
Me too. Thanks so much.
Take care.
It was great meeting you. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Interesting stuff. Things that I guess you need to consider, all right? Especially if you do, I guess the kind of work I do, calling people. Or I'm not a journalist, I'm a talk show host. But you got to be careful, right? Do we draw it at ethics? Longshot Louie asks in the chat room. ethics. Well, when you live in a country in which the Supreme Court has no code of ethics, there's a problem there. I guess if they have no ethics code they have to live by, we should be able to talk about anything. About should have asked Amy. Oh, well. That brings us to the end of this hour. Whew. All right. Tomorrow is Thursday. Howie Klein will be here. And, you know, we just keep plugging away. Sending our best to Tanya. Thank you for bearing with me through that. I find the whole situation so tragic. My heart aches for her and everybody else in her position. Let's hope it's over soon. Unfortunately, I don't think it will be. All right. With that, I will leave you with the news, and I will see you back here tomorrow. As always, thank you for listening. Have a good night. Talk about a roller coaster, though, huh? All right. See you tomorrow. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The man who shot up a subway and terrorized New York City on Tuesday is still on the loose.
No, he's been caught.
He set off smoke grenades and then fired a handgun on a crowded subway train during the morning rush. Police named the 62-year-old Frank James a person of interest. They believe he rented a U-Haul van that's been connected to the shootings in Brooklyn's Sunset Park area. The gunman fired at least 33 times and struck 10 people. Overall, 29 people were hospitalized with injuries from gunshot wounds, smoke inhalation, even falling while trying to escape. The person of interest posted multiple rambling videos on YouTube where he talked about violence and mass shootings, race. There was one video uploaded on Monday in which he said he's thought about killing people who have presumably hurt him. And the search continues. Russian dictator Vladimir Putin on Tuesday said that peace talks between his government and Ukraine had come to a, quote, dead end. And he added that without a deal acceptable to the Kremlin, his forces would continue their war until its full completion. These were Putin's first extended comments since he started this war on Ukraine back in February. He said the stalemate came after Ukraine made, quote, fake allegations of Russian war crimes in the town of Bucha near Kyiv and, quote, deviated from agreements the two sides had reached in peace talks in Turkey. Britain's defense ministry said Russia would likely escalate its attacks on eastern Ukraine within 2 to 3 weeks. President Biden, for the first time, described Russia's actions in Ukraine as genocide.
I'm doing everything within my power by executive orders to bring down the price and address the Putin price hike. In fact, we've already made progress since March inflation data was collected. Your family budget, your ability to fill up your tank, none of it should hinge on whether a dictator declares war and commits genocide in a half a world away.
Biden went further than anybody else has so far. President Zelensky's reaction to the Biden quote was true words of a true leader. While the U.S. government rarely designates atrocities using the term genocide, and it doesn't carry any legal ramifications, it does carry significant weight as Biden seeks to rally countries behind a strategy of isolating and punishing Moscow. Meanwhile, Ukrainian officials say that nearly 200 children have been killed and more than 300 others had been wounded. So sad. From the COVID isn't done with us yet file, the Johns Hopkins tracker tells us that the world has now seen 500 million documented COVID cases. Just saying. In disturbing news from around the country, we'll start in New York. New York's Lieutenant Governor Brian Benjamin resigned Tuesday after being arrested and charged with bribery, fraud, and falsification of records while a state senator. Lovely. Now Governor Kathy Hochul, who just recently served in that position herself and picked Benjamin to succeed her, has to figure out what happens next. Good luck. In South Dakota, the state house impeached Attorney General Jason Ravensburg on Tuesday over his behavior regarding a 2020 car crash that killed a man. The 36-31 vote will lead to a trial in the state Senate, as Ravensburg refused to resign following the impeachment. Republicans in the legislature are divided over what to do, though Governor Kristi Noem called the impeachment, quote, the right thing for the people of South Dakota and for Joe Bover's family. All right. And then there's Oklahoma, which, despite the song, is not okay. Governor Kevin Stitt on Tuesday signed a law banning nearly all abortions in the state.
I promised Oklahomans that I would sign every pro-life bill that hit my desk. And that's what we're doing here today. Senate Bill 612 passed with a vote of 38-9 in the Senate and 70-14 in the House. That's over 80% support in both chambers. We want Oklahoma to be the most pro-life state in the country. We want to outlaw abortion in the state of Oklahoma. Attorney General John O'Connor and I know this bill will be challenged immediately by liberal activists from the coast who always seem to want to come in and dictate and mandate and challenge our way of life here in the state of Oklahoma. The most important thing is to take a stand and protect the unborn and protect life in the state of Oklahoma.
The Oklahoma law is the most extreme challenge passed recently in Republican-dominated states that are hoping to give the Supreme Court's new conservative supermajority an opportunity to overturn Roe v. Wade. The law, which would make performing an abortion a felony unless the pregnant person's life is in danger, is likely to be blocked by the courts. Supreme Court precedents have established that states cannot ban abortion before a fetus can survive outside the womb, and that comes at about 24 weeks into a pregnancy. But the court is considering a case challenging the pre-viability ban. Because of course they are. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Visit NicoleSandler.com and please click on that donate button.